I don't whisper anymore. I architect. I choreograph. I move people like pieces, set fires between friends, plan ideas in lovers, tip dominoes that don't fall until weeks later. They think they're choosing, but I'm the one handing them the matches, the rumors, the tears. And I've never stood this far above the chaos, or felt this hollow doing it. Because while I pull the strings, I swear I feel someone pulling mine. If you haven't already, make sure to follow us and tap the notification bell. We drop new content every day. Stay tuned so you never miss a story. Chapter 1, Invisible Strings. They don't even see the strings. That's the most beautiful part. You move them with gestures so small. A pause, a whisper, a look held a moment too long, and they shift, react, change course, convinced it was their idea all along. You don't need to scream to be powerful. You don't need to fight. You just need to know the script and what part they think they're playing. By now, I'd mastered one-on-one control. I could make a person doubt their thoughts, rewrite their emotions, or destroy a friendship with a look and a sentence left unfinished. But people are just pieces. I wanted the board, entire groups, entire narratives, a system of strings. And high school is the perfect sandbox for a puppeteer. It's loud, messy, emotional. It's cliques pretending to be kingdoms. It's crushes mistaken for love. It's pride bleeding through locker doors and cafeteria tables. All it takes is the right pressure, and everything collapses. The first experiment was small. I didn't touch the popular crowd yet. Too public, too risky. I started with drama club. They were chaotic, passionate, predictable. Two lead actresses, Naomi and Lex, were already on edge. Both wanted the same role in the winter production. Both were talented. Both insecure in different, delicious ways. Naomi needed validation. Lex needed attention. All I had to do was feed each need without ever being the source of the fallout. I planted a single rumor. That Naomi said Lex had slept her way into callbacks. I didn't say it. I didn't even whisper it. I texted it anonymously from a spoof number to Lex's best friend. And then I waited. Within 48 hours, they were screaming at each other backstage. The director pulled Lex from the cast. Naomi cried to a counselor. I offered to mediate, to be a support system for the group. And just like that, I wasn't a manipulator. I was a problem solver. They thanked me for the chaos I created. They gave me power for breaking their trust. From there, it snowballed. Student council elections? I controlled the outcome with a few screenshots and a planted, misunderstood meme. A teacher-student affair rumor? Never proven, but it led to a substitute rotation and a shift in grading schedules I needed for what came next. I started moving the pieces faster, and no one saw me, because I didn't leave fingerprints. I left mirrors. See, when you manipulate groups, you don't push people. You tilt the room. Make them slide where you want without feeling the gravity shift. That's what makes you dangerous. That's what makes you invisible. But the higher I climbed, the colder it got. I found myself watching from the top of stairwells, arms crossed, reading entire conversations from body language alone. A tap on the locker. A hesitation in a hug. A glance too quick. Everyone spoke. No one knew what they were saying. Except me. I wrote their dialogue before they opened their mouths. They were actors. I was the playwright. But something changed that week. It started small. A text I didn't send, forwarded to someone I never spoke to. A teacher asking a strange question during class. Is it true you've been mentoring more students privately? A girl I'd never manipulated, avoiding me in the hallway. Like she knew. Like she saw through the smile. It was a hairline fracture. But I've learned something from all my games. Cracks don't ask permission before they spread. And when you live by pulling strings, you should never ignore the feeling that someone's tugging yours. Chapter 2, Designing the Drama. Power doesn't always come from chaos. Sometimes it comes from choreography. People think drama is spontaneous. They think fights erupt from nowhere. Friendships break like twigs in a storm. But the truth, drama is built, brick by brick, trigger by trigger. You don't light a fire by accident. You design the wind. You leave the fuel. And you hand them the match with a smile that says, "Do what feels right." It started with a party. Friday night, hosted by someone I had no personal connection to. But it didn't matter, because I'd already embedded three agents into the guest list. I didn't call them that out loud. They weren't operatives, They were just emotionally indebted to me. People I'd helped. People who thought I saved them. Jasmine's cousin, who still thanked me weekly for talking her out of a breakdown. Tyler, the closeted sophomore whose secret I held like a crucifix. And Elise, sweet Elise, who never realized I only dated her to access her older brother's grad school laptop. All of them owed me. And I cashed in. The plan was simple. Plant a story. Leak a message. Watch the fallout live. I told Jasmine's cousin to mention that Sophia, a senior, had been texting her ex. Then I told Tyler to mention Sophia's ex was now seeing Jordan, his friend, who just happened to be standing 5 feet away. Then I gave Elise a lie to repeat, that Sophia had sent screenshots to admin of a different student vaping in the locker room. All of it fake. All of it delivered with hesitation. Because hesitation makes a lie sound like a truth you're scared to tell. The result? Spectacular. Screaming in the kitchen. 2 drinks thrown. 1 girl storming off crying into the yard. A teacher's car, mysteriously keyed, blamed on a student who wasn't even at the party. And me? I stood outside by the fire pit, sipping soda, nodding at people who still thought I was the calm in the storm. I wasn't calm. I was the storm. I had planned it to the second. But then something happened that wasn't on the script. A girl, Carmen, got shoved. Hard. She hit her head on the porch step. Blood. Screaming. Sirens. And for the first time in months, I felt off script. Carmen wasn't supposed to be involved. She wasn't even part of the setup. She'd just been standing in the wrong place when the chaos spilled over. Collateral. And when the ambulance came, and the school's whispers turned into investigations, I did what I always do. I adjusted. I shifted blame. I offered testimonies. I played innocent. But that night, as I watched Carmen's friends huddle outside the ER, sobbing, something inside me flickered. Something like guilt. Not enough to stop. Not enough to confess. But enough to register. Because this wasn't just control anymore. This was a theater with no exits. And the more I designed the drama, the less I knew who might burn next. Chapter 3. The smile that wasn't mine. It started as deja vu. A phrase I'd used, showing up in someone else's mouth. A body language cue, tilted head, paused breath, mimicked exactly. A smile I had practiced in front of a mirror for months, now appearing on someone else's face. At first, I thought I was imagining it, that I was just watching too closely, that my need for control had made me paranoid. But then it happened again, and again, and then I couldn't ignore it anymore. It was Monday. I was walking past the east stairwell, my usual morning loop, watching, listening, gathering pieces. And that's when I saw him. Evan, Jr., quiet, forgettable, not part of any clique, not a threat, not even on my radar. But there he was, talking to Jenna Park and Maddie Reyes, 2 girls I'd spent the last semester gently dividing for sport, 2 girls who didn't speak to each other last week, now laughing together like nothing had ever happened. And Evan, he was saying things I recognized. Sometimes people push us away not because they hate us, but because they're scared we'll see who they really are. My line, word for word, even the pause before scared. I stopped walking, watched him, smiled politely when he caught me looking. But inside, my brain was on fire. How? I hadn't written that down. I hadn't said it in front of him. It was something I told a student in private during a staged confession session in the library. There were no witnesses, no recordings, no reason Evan should have known that phrase, unless he'd been watching me, studying me. I started tracking him. Not obviously, just noting his patterns, where he sat, who he spoke to, how often his name came up in conversations where I was once the centerpiece. And the more I watched, the more I realized, he was building something, not exactly like mine, not as polished, not as nuanced, but close, too close. I saw him comfort a crying student near the gym, the same way I had, same cadence, same subtle touch on the shoulder. Same fucking fake vulnerability in his eyes. But it wasn't just imitation. It was evolution. Because when he looked up, he smiled. My smile. The one I used on teachers. On administrators. On Rachel. And it didn't look borrowed. It looked natural. Like he wasn't copying anymore. Like he believed it. That's when something shifted. Not in him. In me. Because for the first time since I pulled my first string, since I made my first whisper into a weapon, I felt replaceable. And manipulators don't fear exposure. They fear irrelevance. They fear being studied. They fear losing the monopoly on truth. And Evan? Evan was taking my blueprint and scribbling his own name across the title page. That night, I stared at myself in the mirror, practiced the smile, the tilt of the head, the rhythm of my voice, and I asked myself, how do you stop a mirror that's learning to reflect without you? And worse, what happens when the mirror starts turning around to face you? Chapter 4, Someone is Watching. Paranoia doesn't arrive like a scream. It creeps in, quiet, measured. It starts as a whisper in your head that says, someone else knows, and you ignore it at first, because you have control, you have plans, you have rules. But that whisper turns into a pulse, then a hum, and eventually, it drowns everything else out. The day after I saw Evan mimic my smile, I started noticing things. Small things. A teacher I'd never spoken to asking if I was feeling off lately. A group of students turning quiet when I walked by. Not laughing, just still. My locker slightly ajar, even though I always double-checked it. A sharper mark on the inside. One I didn't make. Just a single black X. Meaningless. Until it wasn't. By Thursday, I was spiraling. I checked my locker 5 times. Replayed every hallway glance. Every social pattern I thought I'd predicted suddenly felt contaminated. Like someone had entered my game, moved my pieces, and reset the board without my permission. I followed Evan to class. Watched him from outside the window. He was relaxed. Too relaxed. He laughed with people I'd seen cry 2 weeks earlier. He hugged the girl I made believe no one cared. And the worst part, he wasn't using the same tactics anymore. He was evolving. He wasn't whispering to people. They were whispering about him. That's when the fear turned into something else. Obsession. I began tracking everything. Made a map of who spoke to Evan. Who changed routines after interacting with him. Who used phrases I had invented in private conversations. My web was full of anomalies. Names that overlapped. Emotions that shouldn't have spread. Outcomes I hadn't planned. For the first time, my influence wasn't predictable. It was responding. Then I got the note. No envelope. No signature. Just folded once and slipped into my locker like a dare. Inside, written in ink that bled through the paper. You're not the only one watching. No context. No clue. But I felt it like a needle behind my eye. Because it wasn't a threat. It was a mirror. I tried to ignore it. Told myself it was a joke. Told myself someone overheard a line and parroted it. But deep down I knew. This wasn't coincidence. This was architecture. Mine. Being turned against me. That weekend, I didn't leave my room. I stayed up late scrolling student social media accounts, watching posts and comments like puzzle pieces, looking for fingerprints. But there were none. Just patterns I didn't recognize. Which meant one thing. Someone was building a new web. And I wasn't in the center anymore. I was just another thread. Chapter 5, The Hand Behind the Curtain. Every manipulator eventually meets the thing they fear most. Not justice. Not exposure. But reflection. The moment you stop seeing people as puzzles. And realize someone's been solving you the whole time. It was Tuesday. Rain hammered the windows like a warning. Hallways were quieter than usual. Energy off. Something beneath the surface buzzing like a wire about to snap. I had planned my entire day. Scripted every interaction. Controlled every smile I wore. But none of it mattered. Because by 3:22 p.m., everything I built would start to unravel. It happened in the media lab. The school's most ignored corner. No cameras. No supervision. Just old equipment, faded posters, and the smell of forgotten electronics. I walked in expecting silence. Instead, I found Evan, sitting casually at a terminal. One headphone in, staring at a screen full of me. Photos. Notes. Diagrams. A mind map, except it wasn't his. It was mine. My rules. My techniques. My entire system, reflected back at me. Color-coded. Labeled. Dissected. He didn't flinch when I stepped inside. Didn't minimize the window. Didn't even pretend to hide it. He just turned his head and said, "Took you long enough." I didn't speak. Couldn't. I stared at the screen, recognizing phrases I'd whispered in hallways. Methods I'd invented in silence. Charts of social shifts I'd engineered, reversed and reinterpreted. Every line was a mirror. Every word, a fingerprint of mine, traced by someone else. "I've been watching you," Evan said. Calm. Measured. "You taught me more than any teacher here ever could." He gestured to the screen. All I did was listen. I wanted to rage, wanted to tear the files from his hands, but I didn't move, because beneath the anger, beneath the pride, there was something worse. Recognition. Evan hadn't stolen from me. He'd learned, which meant he'd become something else. Not a student, not a victim, but a threat. You thought you were invisible, he said, because you built silence into a weapon. Then he leaned forward, but silence echoes. And I heard you. That's when I realized. He hadn't just mirrored me. He had tracked me, documented me, outplayed me. While I was busy pulling strings, he was watching the hand behind the curtain. And now, he was behind his own. I don't want your throne, he said. I want something bigger. He stood up, looked me dead in the eye. I want to see what happens when the master manipulator loses control. He walked past me, didn't bump me, didn't smirk, just left, quietly, intentionally, leaving me there, alone, staring at myself through someone else's eyes. And for the first time, I didn't feel powerful. I felt studied, like prey, like the game had started over, and I hadn't been told the new rules.